Hello, and welcome to our series, Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources professional in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Fort Keist LLP, and I work with my clients to help them with the HR side of their business. We hope that you will enjoy these discussions with real people about real challenges and real working life situations. Welcome. My guest today is Laura Jean, and I'm so delighted to welcome Laura to this session of Career Resilience. I think that, Laura, you are a prime example of someone who has been resilient throughout your career. So I'm excited to chat with you and welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Just to introduce you a little bit, you're a medical professional, and I feel that we have lots to talk about related to your thoughts about resilience. We also want to talk about bullying in the workplace and your experience with that, because that's very important and always timely. And we also wanted to chat about what it's like to work in private healthcare in Canada, because you're in a different kind of role from your average. So thank you for being with us today. And what I'd like to do to start is ask you just to tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do for a living right now.
Great. So I'm a registered nurse, and I'm working at MedCan at a private clinic in downtown Toronto. Been there for 4.5 years. It's been a great journey, and I love working there. I've also just started working at the airport as a screening officer because of the COVID pandemic that we're going through right now. So I was fortunate to be hired by the Public Health Agency of Canada, and we screen people at the airport, like basic health screening. So I do that. And I also teach yoga. I was teaching prior to the pandemic in an art gallery, but now that it's been ended, I started a YouTube channel. But I got to say, ever since I moved recently, it's been hard for me to get back on that YouTube channel, but I do hope to keep up with the yoga teaching virtually.
Yeah. Okay, and you're located in Toronto. That's where you live and work.
I live in Toronto, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you and I met related to actually to my own health, and what I noticed about you was that you're not just about the medical side of it, you were very much about the human side of it. And I immediately really appreciated that, Laura, because sometimes it's just prescriptive. And, you know, because you deal with so many people, maybe sometimes they're not as human because, you know, you're dealing with a lot of people. But you seem to deal with people on a very human level. And how did you come to that particular skill, do you think?
That's an interesting question. But yeah, you know, I think that I relate to people that way, probably because of I understand suffering. Like I think we all suffer in life. And a lot of times when you work in the clinical field as a nurse, you're encountering people that are suffering to some level.
Yes.
And it needs to be acknowledged in people. And I think when you can acknowledge that and understand that we all have our challenges, it's so important part of healing. I think to heal, it's not just physical in nature, but there's also internal, emotional, spiritual, mental aspects of ourselves that need to be acknowledged, addressed in our humanity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that in people.
Yeah, and it shows. So that was a big part of why I wanted to invite you on to this podcast and series, because I knew that you'd have some interesting background, because you don't just sort of spring fully fledged into that kind of empathy. So before today, we talked about some powerful influences in your journey. And let's go there for a few minutes. You mentioned something about being near to homelessness at one point in your life. Can you just tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. I grew up in Ottawa, but I left alone, difficult family background. So I moved to Toronto after high school at 19 alone and lived in a rooming house. And I was working in the service industry. And it was just every month to make rent or to keep a job in that area was very stressful. And a lot of oppression as well, having a lack of support and being so young and having to figure things out so quickly. It was a fast, steep learning curve. So I was planning myself mentally, like if I go homeless, I'm going to go live here. There's actually an area in Toronto where I thought that's where I'm going to go live if I go homeless. Like it was kind of like preparing myself mentally in case it happened. But I think, so that's what happened. And then I ended up getting 2 jobs and 3 jobs. I noticed always having 2 or 3 jobs was a good way of survival. And actually to this day, I have 2 jobs. Like, so it's, I think I just noticed that was a good way of managing that stress of never, when you have, And so that's how I kind of just kept working myself from that place.
What was your support system?
There was no support system at that time. It was work. I just learned how to work really hard. And I think developing good work ethic and doing your work well, that also guarantees your job.
Yes.
And when you're living like that, you do everything you can to keep your job. Mm-hmm. So going about, like learning to work hard. And so I gained a lot of skill by doing that. Like it was a difficult time, but very educative and informative for me to learn.
Did you realize at the time, Laura, how brave you were being?
I felt it when I actually, the day that I had moved into the rooming house and I was alone there, like I felt it because the fear took over. At the same time, I had this internal feeling in my heart that was the right thing to do.
Yes.
I needed to put myself into a better environment and grow and my life improved. It really improved.
Yes. Yeah. So you had that freedom.
Yeah. And I think because I was young, you know, you take risks. Mm-hmm. That's a great time to take risks. It's a great time to step out into the unknown. And so that was a good time to do it. If I would have waited longer, you know, I don't think it would have been the same.
No. So when did you go into the path of higher education and getting into nursing and so on?
Yeah, so I got bored working in the service industry. I never had any other aspiration, really. I just thought that would be my lifelong job. I got bored, and I was working near George Brown College on King Street near King and Jarvis. Mm-hmm. And basically, I went there and figured out I could get into nursing school there. So I started nursing school, and as I studied nursing, I started to be really passionate about homelessness and mental health. So the community aspects of nursing, I realized that it's a broad field. You don't have to be in a hospital. Mm-hmm. And I was really interested in that area because of the risk of myself being almost homeless. I wanted to understand it more. Mm-hmm. I wanted to understand the deeper aspects and the other, and how do people get pushed into that situation? Like if you're going to prevent it from happening, how would you go about it?
Yes.
So then I did my, the diploma, and then the undergraduate degree at Ryerson, and then graduate studies at UFT in health promotion. And health promotion, there's a master's in public health and health promotion. So that's the broader aspect where you really do start understanding the social determinants of health, mm-hmm. and how to create programs in community to prevent health issues. And so homelessness is seen as a health issue, mental health, like all these community social aspects of health. Mm-hmm. And so it began slowly, and it kind of creeped up, and the passion just started to really grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got your master's.
Yeah.
So from a 19-year-old who was living in a rooming house to getting your master's.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure what the odds are on that, but it is certainly, certainly impressive.
Thanks. It took 10 years.
Those 10 years would have happened anyway.
Yeah.
What was your thesis on? Did you develop a thesis?
It was a course-based master's, and but I did have to write an 80-page paper, and it was based on the child welfare system in Ontario. And I studied the children's aid societies across Ontario and how they're being run, and I provided recommendations how to improve the child welfare societies, because there's, yeah, like every program, there's always issues, things to be improved. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so from the health promotion perspective.
So did you run with that as your career when you graduated after that 10 years?
Well, after I graduated, at the end of my grad at UFT, there was an internship. And so I chose to work at the Ministry for Child and Youth Services. It's a provincial government where they actually govern the Children's Aid Societies in Ontario. So after writing that paper, I worked there as part to finish my program.
So you stayed for your internship and then left?
Yeah.
And where did you go then?
That's when I applied for full-time work, and I at public health, started working there in the maternal infant health program. Mm-hmm. So it was another government job.
So, and this you mentioned as your dream job. Why did you think that's going to be your dream job?
Yeah, I mean, the work was amazing. Working with, in prenatal education. So that was amazing for me, because being passionate about youth homelessness and mental health, healthy child development is a key social determinant of health. So if you can ensure healthy child development, you're giving that kid the best chance of life. Mm-hmm. And so I was working in the prime area for ensuring healthy child development. So they see how it's like preventionary.
Yes.
Long term. And so I love the fact that I was in the area like that. Working with pregnant women, infant feeding, and normal hours, Monday to Friday, you know, benefits, pension. It was a great all around job, and the work was really fantastic.
You mentioned that you saw discrimination towards men. I'm very interested in that, because I think sometimes men have a challenging time. So can you run with that thought for a few minutes, Laura?
Yeah, absolutely. So being passionate about healthy child development, based on research, it's evidence-based that fathers need to be involved early in the child's life and stay involved throughout that child's life to have a relationship with that child. They're least likely to abuse that child when they're involved early, and they're more likely to be there in a supportive role and be present. So knowing that from my studies at UFT and Ryerson, when I was at public health, the prenatal programs were all for women. And I was working in community centers for prenatal women to come for health teachings, prenatal classes.
Yes.
And men were not allowed to come. Men were actually excluded from the program, from coming to the classes. And so I had brought this up at our team meeting and with my manager and with my colleagues. I'm like, men should be included in these programs. You know, it's evidence-based that they should, it's best that they're included and they're part of the whole experience. And they were not included because of the issues of domestic violence and the woman experiencing violence when they're pregnant. They're more at risk when a woman's pregnant to experience violence with a partner, intimate partner violence. Mm-hmm. And so to protect the woman we were screening women for intimate partner violence. We were screening women for red flags if they were in unhealthy relationships. And so they thought that if men were involved, the woman wouldn't speak up and they'd be too afraid to express their issues if they were experiencing a violent household or abusive relationship. So you can understand I can understand that. So basically what we decided to do, the community center where I was working, I fought with the coordinator at the community center because we both thought that men should be involved. So we had once a month where men could come to our program. This was the first program at public health and prenatal health to have men in part of the education program. So once a month, we allowed men to come to the program, and it was really successful, and the women really liked having their partners there with them.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've understood in the past is that men who are very controlling with a woman during the relationship, that things will change drastically and escalate when the woman becomes pregnant.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
She's vulnerable. A woman, when a woman's pregnant, they're really vulnerable. And so when a man feels the need to feel powerful or to assert his power, like, men who are abusive often have low self-worth and they're very insecure. And they're using their power to feel secure, to feel manly, to feel in charge. And when a woman's pregnant, she's weak. It's hard to protect yourself because you can't move the same. You're bearing a child, like you're so much more guarded, like you need to protect yourself more. And so I think men who have issues with insecurity, they prey on weak people.
Yeah.
She's weaker, more vulnerable. It's easier to scare her, easier to control, easier to manipulate because she's so vulnerable at that time.
And I can see that you were passionate about that job and what you were offering and what you were recommending, and actually seeing some of your recommendations get implemented. And that's very exciting in a job. And I think that sometimes how we feel is, my job is so great, I just want to do my job.
And yes.
Then other things, external factors, start to whittle away at that feeling. And I think that is sort of the next part of your story. So can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So I was working with on a team of, we're all women, and I experienced workplace bullying. Basically, I love the work I was doing. Yeah. And then I would often take on my colleagues' work. So they would kind of like pass their work on to me. And I was in the beginning, so I did the mistake in the beginning of accepting their work. And so to me, it was like, didn't matter to me. I was just taking on, because you're as a team. It's like when you're in a group project, there's always one person doing the more work. So I was taking on the work. I didn't mind, and I was taking it on. But then at a certain point, they started expecting me to keep taking on their work. And I overshared information, my own personal information with them. Mm-hmm. And I think that led me to get judged in a certain way. And sometimes people can use your own personal information to undermine you. They can use it against you.
Yes.
And I think because I love, when you're doing a good job and you work hard on the team, it makes it more obvious who's not working hard and who's not doing their job. It became more obvious. And so I think the bullying started when they started using my personal information to put me down. They were trying to drag me down so that I wouldn't look like I was doing a great job, and forced me to take on their work. And I started pushing back and saying, no, I'm not going to do your work. So I started to push back because I was getting burnt out. And I was like, I can't do your work. I started to push back. That's when it really started. They wouldn't let me push back. They really wanted me to like to take on their work and like do their work. And that's how it's going to be. That was going to be the status quo. And so I really pushed back. And that's like, I started calling in sick and not going to work. And it just kind of kept going down from there. Yeah.
Laura, where was your manager in all this process? Because you have people to turn to.
Yeah, I definitely did go to the manager, and she knew very well about the bullying. It was the girl, when I got hired on, the girl before me had quit her job too. And I realized why. The manager tried to help out, but she did, given that I was newer, I was there for 2 years at that point. Mm. The other nurses have been there for 15 years, 10 plus 15 years.
Yes.
So she seemed to have favored the more mature senior nurses. there seems to be like a senior position when you're there for so long that you get a certain status. And when you're newer, it was just kind of like, you know what, that's, you have to, that you kind of do what you're told.
Yes.
There was a bit of a power in different differences.
Yes. Yeah. So here you are in a job you love, doing a job you love, and the work environment starts to go downhill, and you're bullied.
Yeah.
What did that do to your self-esteem?
Oh, yeah. Huge impact. Huge impact. Like, I didn't enjoy the work I was doing. I was paranoid all the time because I didn't know what they were going to try to say or do to put me down. So I kept having to cover, like I kept being afraid of like walking on eggshells, I guess. And I just didn't feel good about being at work, and I didn't want to be there anymore. Like I liked doing the work, but I didn't feel good who I was working with.
Yes.
And they were, and you're working as a team. So you're always with your team to do your work. So it was really hard. I just took the joy out of everything. I didn't feel joy anymore. Yes.
Did you try and talk directly to the people that were bullying you to say what the effect on you was?
No, I don't think I did express the effect they had on me. I did not do that. Yeah. I don't know why. I guess I didn't want them to know that they were hurting me. Because I guess that's what they wanted to do, ultimately. And I was trying to keep a brave face. Mm-hmm. I was trying to keep a brave, like, pretending like I was okay. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I'm saying anything particularly revelatory when I mention that frequently women are mean to each other in the work environment. And I've lived that. You've lived that. Lots of people listening or watching us today have lived that. What is your take on why women who can be such amazing friends as individuals?
Yeah.
What is your take on why women can be mean to each other in the work environment?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Women, I think that the women who bullied me, they were unhappy. I think they were unhappy. I think they were having challenges in their lives. And I think there was like a projection onto me. Mm-hmm. And I was happy. And I was happy and enjoying life at that time very much. And I think it bothered them.
Yeah.
And then on some level they needed to bring me down so they wouldn't notice how unhappy they were.
Yes. Yeah.
Does that make sense? That's what I was kind of feeling.
Yes. But it's interesting, isn't it, that even though we can say, well, perhaps they're unhappy in their life and this says so much more about them than it says about me, it still does quite a number on our psyche. And I know in times in my life when I've gone through that in the workplace, I've thought, I just want to enjoy the job. I'm willing to work so hard.
Yes.
I just want to work and contribute and help. That's my modus operandi in life. And so when I had things like that happen, what I chose to do was escape. I just pulled up the drawbridge and escaped. Now, what you described is you started to call in sick.
Yeah.
And that's a really dangerous road for you to go down.
Yeah.
So how did that feel when you started calling in sick?
Yeah, it was bad. I just didn't want to be there anymore. And I just was calling in sick and taking every day off I could to not be there. I just didn't want to be there. And so it just kept going downhill. The relationships got to a point where you don't even say hi when you get to the office in the morning, you know, it's just that yes. Like cold shoulder.
Yes.
And that's so unhealthy. And how can I do my work and support these pregnant women who are vulnerable when I'm in a situation where I'm in such a toxic environment myself.
Yes.
You know, I couldn't, so it was affecting my ability to do my work even like properly. It was really hard to focus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did anyone in senior management talk to you about your absenteeism?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it started to become an issue. And then it just got to the point where I was like, why am I still coming here? I was talking to a friend outside of work and I told him like, it's, you know, I'll give it till the spring, which was 6 months. I'll give it six more. I was 2.5 years. And so I'll give it 6 more months. And he was like, why? He's like, just quit. He's like, leave. And I was like, well, the pension and it's such a good job and it's stable and maybe I can switch departments. And, you know, like I was like trying to get out of it that way. And, and really, and it just got to the point where it was like, you know what? Like, so it came back to the systems. I'm like, how do I know this is not going to happen in another department? Like, I think this area for me, I just started to think this job, this public health job is probably not just for me. Mm-hmm. I just started to think like I need to leave.
Yes.
Like life is talking to me. I started to see it as an omen. You know, life is talking to me and telling me like, you know what, just go a different direction.
I love that life is talking to me phrase. I've never thought of it that way before. Can you expand on that a little
bit?
That's neat.
Yeah, I read this book in my 20s, long time ago, from Paulo Coelho, and it talked about, you know, life does talk to us, and when you get these red flags, it's called omens, like good vibes, bad vibes. When you're in an environment, in at every angle, it's a red flag. It's like, maybe it's time to take a step back and think, you know what? Every angle is a red flag. Maybe I should just go somewhere else where there's no red flags. Mm. Like, why don't I go where life feels good? And at that time, when I closed my eyes and I was like, what should I do? And I reflect, contemplated, and I really felt like, you know what? Why don't I just leave and work somewhere in a different country, you know? And that's what I started thinking. Like I can transfer, take this, what I learned. I got really great training at public health in terms of the training was really good. I learned so much about prenatal health, education, mm-hmm. infant feeding.
Yes.
I was like, I can take this information and I can bring it somewhere else, like knowledge transfer. I can bring it somewhere else and help people somewhere else in the world that need it. Why should I stay here in this toxic place?
So that was your tipping point. There was way more red flags than a pension could possibly offset.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that for a second, though. You did say to your friend, you know, good pension. Was security important to you? Has security been important to you in your...
What? It was at that time. That was part of the reason why I thought it was my dream job, because I thought it was safe. And then I realized, you know what, like, that's when I realized, but it's toxic. And I've never been so miserable at a job, and I've had lots of jobs. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and that's where my mind expanded. And I was like, you know what, job safety is not about pension or benefits. Job safety is a lot more than that. It's about the people who you're with.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's so true. And, you know, it's a cliche that we spend most of our time at work and so on, but it's just so important that work works for you. And that's such a big part of this series, is to make sure that people can hear other perspectives on making work work for you. Now, as I said, for me, when things went really bad and I had to withdraw, I would withdraw. I would change jobs and I would pull up the drawbridge and so on. But you chose to do something quite dramatic. So can you tell me about that?
Yeah. I decided to resign from public health, and I searched out this organization, a volunteer organization, where I could work as a nurse in a hospital in Nepal. And I could provide infant feeding support there and prenatal education to people there in Nepal. So when I found that out, and I found out that it was going to work, I resigned. And it felt so good to resign. Like, it felt so good to be able to step away from such a toxic situation. But yet I also got good education learning from the training.
Yes.
And I took that with me. Mm-hmm. So I didn't leave empty-handed.
No.
Yeah. And I come to that place where I was like, you know, this is not safe. This is not a great job.
No.
And so I left. I went to Nepal. I was there for 3 months, worked in a hospital. I lived with a family in a rural area, 7 hours outside Kathmandu. And it was so incredible. Like, it was such a risk. It was kind of a big risk to do that.
Yes.
But it was the same in my heart. It was the same feeling like I had when I had to leave Ottawa when I was 19 to move into the rooming house. It was this internal feeling in my heart where it was super hard, but I knew it was the right thing to do.
Yes.
And this was the same situation. It was really hard to do, but in my heart, I felt it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, information can come to us internally from our inner, deeper selves. Mm-hmm. I think we hold in really valuable information there. And it's good to trust that intuition that we have inside ourselves and not let fear control us.
Yeah. Or pensions and security.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's false. It's a false sense of security. I think you have to create your own security.
Yes. So you went into MedCan, and you just tell us a little bit about MedCan as a model so we understand what MedCan does?
Yeah, MedCan is a clinic in Toronto. It's a private healthcare, and how it works, it's a membership-based healthcare in Canada. So people that go there pay a membership, and there's different types of membership, different levels of membership, and they can see physicians there for like a walk-in clinic, which is called a year-round care. They can get health assessments, which is like a 4 or 5 hour full physical assessment where they see numerous health professionals during that day. So it's a comprehensive clinic for primary care, but the referrals still go back to the public health system. So it's not like people are cutting through in line to see specialists. It's still back to OHIP.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And in a way, isn't it, I'm just trying to get my head around this, isn't it preventative to some degree, so that those people aren't such a burden on the public health system? So the public health system has a little bit more latitude. Is that a crazy thought process?
No, that makes sense.
And you like that job and it's working for you.
Yeah. It's been great. Like, the culture and the way that it is preventative, and it's, the work is great. It's challenging. I've learned so much. Mm-hmm. It seems to have been working very well, yeah.
Before we end, is there one piece of advice you'd like to give to our listeners and viewers, just based on your very complex working career and life? As you said, everybody's life is complex and so on, but what piece of advice would you give all of us?
I would say that perseverance is the number one key thing that's helped me build resilience and move through challenges in life. So if you're going through a really hard time and you feel like the walls are caving in, persevere. Just keep putting one step in front of the other. It doesn't have to be a big step, but just keep doing it every single day, and things get better. They do get better. And so that's the key thing I would say.
Perseverance. And you've had that, and it's made all the difference. I can see that. Thank you so much, Laura, for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Jan. It's been such a pleasure. I'm really happy that we met, and for you to invite me here today. Thank you so much.
And to our viewers and listeners, thank you for joining Laura and me today. It has been absolutely so interesting to hear about her background and some of the challenges. And for those of you, any of you who are dealing with bullying situations, please get some help. Talk to people that are important to you, that you trust, and get yourself some help, because sometimes we feel trapped when we shouldn't feel trapped. And also consider yoga. Thank you so much for being with us today, and until we meet again.
Bye.